Welcome back, everyone. It's Nate with a private service announcement. Today's interview is with the man, the myth, and the legend, Ian Ammendrude. This is a guy who I've looked up to for years, ever since he was attending the same church I do here in Victoria. He moved a number of years back to Auckland, New Zealand, where him and his wife, Laura, are living just now. And so, despite the 19-hour difference between here and there, we got this interview going and we got to talk a little bit about what life is like for him on the other side of the pond. We start our conversation talking about the difference between City Light Church, the small, really homegrown, small town feel church that I'm at right now that he grew up at, in comparison to the church he's working at right now, which has multiple campuses across their city. What's the value of face-to-face, one-on-one interactions? What do small groups bring to making a church full of life? All of those things and much more we chat about, and Ian gives some awesome perspective based on his experience in both the large and the small church settings. Later in the interview, we look specifically at his work journey, and I did not know, but I found out that the man was working as a mailman for a number of years. And oh man, there I laughed so hard at a few of the interactions he shared. Dogs literally chasing him. Oh, I thought that's only for movies. No, we chat about those and a few other things that he ran into in that work. And then during COVID, he's working more now in his church post-mailman job. Very interesting. He's doing digital marketing and how working from home and working in social media, all that stuff, how that has both changed and not actually changed parts of his work. It's a very interesting conversation towards the middle. And because he's a father, well, at least about to be in about a month, we talk a little bit about what he's most excited for and what frightens him the most about having a new child very, very soon. He called himself a bad uncle because he's a bad influence on his nieces and nephews. Well, he also has a thought, weighs in about how he's going to be as a father, and it's hilarious. So I hope you enjoy it. We talk about other things and much more in here. So wherever you are, whatever time you're listening, sit back, relax, and enjoy this interview with Ian Ammendrude on a private service announcement. Well, thank you, Jesus, for another day and another interview, this time with my friend Ian Ammendrude. Thank you for the ability for us to do this, even though we're on the opposite side of the world from each other right now. I pray that our conversations would be fun and that we'd learn something from each other. In Jesus' precious name, I pray. Amen.
Amen.
Ian, whether you realize it or not, you were an important part of my early high school years because you took me under your wing. You and I both grew up attending City Light Church, formerly Victoria Full Gospel Fellowship, where our church basically maxed out at about 100 people on a Christmas or Easter service. You were 18, maybe 19 or 20 years old when I was just in my early high school days, yet you would bring me with you to Glad Tidings Sunday night services before going out to DQ for what's now my favorite cookie dough ice cream. Thank you, my friend, for showing me that.
Pleasure.
Why did you do it? What was so important about investing in me, one youth at our small church, when you clearly had friends your own age to spend time with?
Yeah, that's a good question. And if I'm completely honest, I probably can't remember exactly what the motivation was. And there was probably multiple motivations. I mean, it's possible that your mom may have asked, hey, is it okay if Nate came? I don't remember if she did or not, but I do remember it was never an issue. And like, it was convenient. You live just down the street. So I was happy to do it. And I guess to give myself a bit of credit, I was focused on youth And I think I definitely felt for the youth in our church. City Light's an awesome church, but it's pretty limited in terms of what it can offer for youth. So I remember going through youth at City Light, and it was a lot of fun, but it just lacked some connection points. There weren't enough people to make friends with and grow your social circles. So yeah, I was more than happy to have you come along to Glad Tidings, and it's an honor to kind of grow up in the same church, but to see you grow into who you've become as well. Like, I'm definitely proud of how you've turned out and who you've become. It's an honor to, I guess, play a small part of that.
Well, you know what? I do appreciate that. And for real, it was one of those things that I look back on those early high school days as a defining and as a really notable set of experiences, because I would look forward to every Sunday night getting to go with you, getting picked up in your Mazda protege, the silver one. Come on. With those rims, I'm pretty sure your parents still have it with the same rims, unless they recently got rid of it. I swear I still see it around.
It's gone now. Some other young
It's
bucks rolling
imprinted
on
in my
past.
brain then, because I can't forget that. And we'd get to go together and shout out to Paul and all the other people that we used to go together with. And I felt like an absolute celebrity. Like it was, I felt so cool. And you know what? I'll never forget that.
You were cool though. Otherwise, we wouldn't have allowed you to come with us.
There was a
So
little bit of a bar that I did reach.
you did reach the bar.
No, but all things considered, like it was one of those things that I've never forgotten, because like you said, our church, City Light Church, didn't have a lot of youth our age. And when I say our age, I'm particularly thinking of my own age, and I know that yours as well, there wasn't too many, but you also did have a few more people that you could connect with than arguably I'd say around my age. I think there was only one person that was Sierra Shrigley, who was around my age, and then maybe a year or two younger, there might have been somebody, and it was just really sparse. And so it kind of highlighted even more for me in that time. There's so few people I could spend time with, but to have somebody whose family was really important and influential in our church, and somebody particularly as enjoyable to be around and as funny to be around as yourself, like for me, that was something that I've never forgotten. And it actually, for me, has been a bit of like a standard on what mentorship within like a small church, youth in a small church, what that could and should look like. I've had enough time over the years to really think back and reflect on the things that kept me at our church. And, you know, in a time where I was starting to like wonder, should I just go to other youth groups where there's other people? Those Sunday nights with you, going to DQ, spending time with people that otherwise I'd never get to spend time with, that was always a part of my internal conversation. So I always wanted to ask you about that, because now I'm at a point where there are many people younger than myself that need mentoring and need discipleship, and that's really what it's about, right? That's what this that's what the church is really called to do and meant to do. So I always wondered what part of that was. You know, of course though, of course my mom, she's got to be in there somewhere.
Yeah, well, she's always in there, but I don't really remember if she did say anything or not, but it wouldn't surprise me if she did.
I can't confirm or deny. Yeah, you know, you're not here anymore though. You're in New Zealand now. You're working for and attending a church that has more campuses than we usually have members at a Saturday potluck. Honestly, from your experience within a small hometown church setting and this large scale, almost corporate faith community, what influence do intimate one-on-one or small group connections play in the overall vitality of a church?
Yeah, I mean, it's huge, especially for a church of a larger size. You kind of notice once a church reaches a certain point, you have to create certain boundaries and certain rules, and it comes almost corporate in a sense. And one-on-one and small groups kind of provide that sort of discipleship or mentorship, also provide some pastoral care for people and just community. It's really hard to get to know someone on a Sunday when there's thousands of faces that you see, and you know, from one week to the next, you may not see the same faces. So yeah, I think it's very important to have a system like that. And it is as well in a small church as well. But I think it looks a bit different because, you know, every Sunday you see the same people and there's plenty of time to catch up with the same people. So I think where the value is in a small church is it's great to invite people. People that normally wouldn't come to church would feel more comfortable coming to your home, for example.
Right.
So that's one of the benefits in a small church.
Well, I mean, on your experience then moving from the small church to the big church, what was that like?
I guess how it all started was when we first got to New Zealand, we're like, okay, we need to find a church. And we did a bit of traveling. So we bought a van and traveled, you know, north tip to south tip of New Zealand. And every Sunday we would stop in at a different church. And if ever you get to go traveling again, definitely check out churches, because it's really, I don't know, it's an amazing feeling that you step into a church and you automatically feel like you're at home or you're with family. Even though it might be a different country or a different culture, it's just strange that you have the same values and beliefs, and you automatically just fit in. So it's quite a cool feeling. But we ended up finding Life, which is the church we're part of now. And even though it was big, it like you said, it did a really good job of connecting people. And we got connected through a small group. So that's kind of how we got started. And then it just grew from there.
You weren't just swimming in a whole sea of other, like, random churchgoers from these huge campuses. I mean, I've probably only been to a mega church one time in the States before. I can't even barely imagine what it's like when you walk in the door and there's more people there than we have pages in our hymnals.
Yeah, and for sure, we would have probably, had we just stuck with going on Sundays, I don't know that we really would have built that relationship or those connections. So you almost have to get in there and you have to join a group, you have to join a team. Otherwise, there's just not enough time or space to really build those connections and relationships. So it's a bit different than a small church where, you know, you show up on a Sunday and you stick out like a sore thumb and everyone's saying hi. And, you know, you come again the next week and you see the same handful of people. But there is a bit more effort required, I think, to get that connection in a large church.
So it kind of took some initiative and took some effort on your part to get connected. You said there's the small group aspect of things.
Yeah.
I can only imagine what that feels like, because like you said, at a smaller church like City Light or Victoria Full Gospel, when you were here, it's easy. You walk in the door and there isn't a lot of options really. And so you can't really hide. You can't get away from the attention, because like you said, stick out like a sore thumb. Like, everybody notices the person who doesn't usually attend. But at a large church like that, that's not the case. And I added in the question the piece about vitality, because I imagine church life and vibrance and like welcomeness and all that plays a part in you wanting to stick around at a place.
Yeah, for sure. And large church or small church, It's the same spirit and the same messages, but there may be different approaches. So yeah, even though it's a large corporate church, we still felt like there was a place for us, and we really got behind kind of the heart and the spirit of leadership and what they wanted to accomplish and what their goals were. And I think as well they did a really good job at providing, I guess, authenticity from stage. And off the stage too, now that we're a part of staff, which is quite cool. But yeah, I think every church too is different. Like every church excels in different areas. And part of that is size, as well. But yeah, we just managed to slot ourselves in, and we had tried out other churches as well that didn't really feel like a good fit. So yeah, we're fortunate to have found life.
You kind of got a sense from the other places too, what really worked for you and what drew you in. And so you ended up getting drawn in to the point that you actually are working at the church now, at Life Church. So since you currently work at the church, I believe you had said your role was in the realm of digital marketing. Interesting during these COVID times. I wonder how has COVID-19 affected your online heavy job position?
Yeah, well, it's definitely gotten busy. To be honest, I'm thankful I still have a job, because jobs are dropping. And so at first it was really nice. We were working from home, which was awesome. And my wife is, she's pregnant and almost ready to give birth. So it was nice to be at home with her and just have some quality time. She would make me lunch, and I could pretty much just sit in the spare room in my bathrobe. I'd even do Zoom meetings with my upline, and I'd just be in my bathrobe, and he'd be like, "What?" For important meetings, I always put on a dress shirt, though.
Well, you don't need to cover the jams in the bottom, though.
That's right. But yeah, it's been really, really busy, and we've had to be on our toes, constantly changing the website and the app, because as the different lockdown levels change, church looks different. So this week again, we're looking at meeting together in person for the first time. It'll be smaller numbers. It'll be much smaller numbers. I think it's limited to 100.
I
So,
think it's 50 in Canada, actually, or in BC at least right now.
okay. Yeah, we've been fairly similar, in terms of where we're at. But it is constantly changing, and there's really short time frames, so it's just kind of, you have to just be on your feet, ready to go.
Right. And like, so for digital marketing, do you take a direct, are you doing the direct work in choosing or changing what's going on in the app and on the website and all that?
So there is a team of us. So on our communications team, there's probably eight or so of us, and that includes a couple designers and a couple technical guys like myself, and then one person that focuses mainly on social media and different Sunday creativity, and then we have kind of the managers of the team as well. So
Boom, dream team.
it's nice when you work on a team, because you don't necessarily carry everything on your shoulders. And so most of the decisions would come from the executive leadership, and they might have an idea, hey, we're doing this, how can we, like, let's make sure that we get the word out there. And that's where we would come in, and we would say, okay, we'll have to send out an email, a text message. We'll have to post on social media. And it really depends too on how much we need to communicate. So for this Sunday, we're probably not going to communicate it that broadly because it's only limited to 100 people. So we're just going to release a notification on the app and it'll be first term or first come, first serve. So if we communicate it broadly, there's going to be a lot of disappointed people.
Do you have like security guards like lined up at the gates ready to hold back the crowds and everything?
No, it'll be an online registration. So it'll be like tickets, right? So it'll be like getting tickets for an exclusive concert. So
invited by Jesus himself.
Yeah. And it is sad. It is sad that we do have to limit the amount of people that come to church, but we do have online as well. So it'll be the same service, just certain people will be able to watch it in person. It'll almost be like being backstage at like, you know, a night show or like Ellen or one of those talk shows where there's an audience.
Oh, with a live, like it's a live stream recording, but there's a live audience in it.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah. Because 100 people, I know what that looks like. That's literally our church.
Yeah. So our central campus seats 2,000. So having 100 is very, very small.
That's barely the first row.
Yeah. But there will be staff on top of that, which is nice. So that'll fill it out a bit.
I'll be interested what that looks like, what that feels like. Just a couple people. Amen. Good time. So, I mean, when you got to the church, when you had been shopping around, I don't know how the timeline worked, but it was Laura who got a job first there.
Mm-hmm.
Your wife, she originally got that church job, and you found yourself for a couple of years not working in the church, but you're working as a mailman, or what are they even called over there?
They're called a postie, mate.
Postie, mate. I can't even say it.
Kiwis would probably give me a hard time saying, oh, you sound Aussie.
You just don't sound like, you don't sound Canadian, you don't sound Kiwi. What do you sound like? Somewhere right in the middle. Just what's confused. One of the most odd interactions you found yourself in during those Amazon delivery days?
Yeah. So working for New Zealand Post was awesome, but there were some crazy interactions. I can't count the amount of times that I was chased by dogs. That's a thing. That's a thing. They lose it. Like, absolutely lose it. There's one dog on my route and it had the most high-pitched and shrill like bark ever. Like, it would pierce your ears and they could hear you coming. And this one day I was driving down the street and I was approaching the house and I saw two high school girls walking in front of the house, and the dog heard me coming and just lost it and just barked so loud, and these girls screamed like, ah! But I saw a guy arrested on one of my routes, and I saw this like drug dealer lobbed a brick at his dog that was running toward me. I thought it was coming to kill me, but it was just running away from him. Yeah, people would always answer their doors in pajamas or their underwear. It would be like 3 p.m. and someone would come to their door in pajamas. And I'd be like, oh, okay. Now that I've worked from home, I completely understand.
Yeah, you're the guy in the house coat.
Yeah. The worst, I would say the worst interaction, the most awkward interaction had to have been, I had a parcel to deliver. So I went to the door. The door was open. I knocked. The second after I knocked, I looked, I could see inside, and this woman was breastfeeding. And she immediately was like, oh, and I immediately turned away and I was like, oh no, like, oh, I just put my hand on my head. And a minute later she came out and she apologized. I was like, oh, like, yeah, that's okay. I'm sorry too. And yeah, just the worst you know, one of those moments that you just wish never happened.
The peeping Tom.
Yeah. So you always, that's the thing. You always feel like a pervert, even though you're not, but you're like walking on people's property past their windows and
they got insurance, hopefully. The closest I ever got was what, 4 or 5 years, actually, I think, of delivering papers. People knew me by name, but I would be doing that twice a week for 5 years. Literally, they saw me grow half a decade while I'm doing the Saanich News.
Mm-hmm.
Man, if there is any sort of character building out there, then that is it. Like, how do you stick to a job where you get $40 a month? That's child labor, man.
How is that legal? That's 100%. Like, it's like sweatshop.
I imagine all the movies where the mailman's getting chased. I just imagine it's a joke. Maybe somebody once had that. You're saying it's legit. It's
a thing. I don't know what it is. I think because mailmen they have a uniform. They're every day they're going onto the dog's property. And dogs are very territorial.
That's so true.
So they know, they've been trained, because you are there every day. They've been trained, okay, this guy's going to come onto my territory. And so they hate you. They hate mailmen because you're constantly challenging them.
You come up to the gate and you're like, blah, blah, blah.
What? Come on, what? And I would, like, when they were behind a gate, I would, like, slap the mail on, like, the fence and... Huh? You can't get me.
And then you'd book it into your truck.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah. Those days, good days. You're done with that. You finished with that and then got into the church job, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
If I remember.
A huge blessing, you know. I mean, delivering mail was great for that season, but it got old pretty quick. Delivering mail in the pouring rain, like, it really comes down here. It'd be like a monsoon and the envelopes wouldn't even be envelopes anymore. It would be mush. You'd be putting mush into people's letterboxes. But I remember my first few weeks working in an office. I'm like, this feels so good. I'd look out the window and it's pouring rain. I'd be like, yes, this is the life.
Warm. I'm dry.
It's also really rewarding working at a job that you are constantly growing, learning, and you're not doing it to make money. You're actually doing it to further the kingdom, which this is the only job where I've had like that. And it's incredible. Like, I've never really been a company man until now, because it's not about bottom dollar.
Mm-hmm. It's so true in my work. When I finally felt like I knew I wanted to become a counselor, that gratification just from the work, regardless of the paycheck, that feels so good. It's so rewarding. You walk away from what you're doing, and at least in my experience, there's a pride in that work, mm-hmm. and there's a sense that it's not just mundane. And you know what? I've also thought about the fact that not everybody gets the opportunity to work in a job that they love. And, you know, I've done my fair share of jobs that were not my favorite. Actually,
the mail route.
People start the mail route for sure. But actually, they were better to me than McDonald's.
You worked at McDonald's?
I worked at McDonald's.
Oh, you've done your dues.
Thank you. I worked there in grade 12. I quit soccer so that I could work this job and get enough money to go on 2 or 3 grad trips. We had our grad rafting trip that happened like literally September, October, I think. I don't know. I didn't get to go. So that was one thing I was planning for. Then we had our Missions Mexico trip, the one trip I did end up going on, which I think you were still at the church back then, so you may have even remembered when I was giving updates about that.
I think I may have bought a hot dog to fundraise for you.
Heck yes, that is a classic City Light move, the hot dog and chili fundraisers.
Maybe it was you, maybe it was someone else.
Could have been anybody. There was 1,000 of those. And whatever other trips we had, I quit soccer. I worked at this job. They didn't give me shifts. They gave me one shift a week. They were like super cold. And they always put me on the fry vat. Anybody who worked at McDonald's, they know that is the trash job. Yeah, no, I'm working in a job I enjoy. It's nice to see that with your experience just going to a new country and kind of new, like you were living in Canada forever and mm-hmm. then you moved over there, got that job, and then the Lord kind of took you into a place where you felt you were doing something with purpose and something mm-hmm. that was something kind of cool. You know, so you were born here in Canada. Well, you have New Zealand citizenship from your mother.
Yeah.
So whether, even if your heritage is Kiwi, you clearly had to learn a thing or two when you moved from Victoria over mm-hmm. there. So tell me about the slang. Canadian to Canadian, what are your favorite phrases that islanders like myself should probably adopt?
Yeah, well, it's funny you say islanders because most of the people that use slang here are islander, like Pacific Islander. Yeah, Auckland actually has the highest Pacific Islander population in the world. So more than Honolulu or places like that.
Oh, dang.
And they've got some awesome slang.
Hit me up.
One of them is, instead of saying thanks, you'd say chur. And I can't do it well because I don't have the accent, but I do my best. So yeah, if you're like, oh, let me get the door for you or something, you'd say, oh, sure, bro. Another one that is really funny is skucks. And that means cool or trendy. You'd be like, oh man, I bought a new car. You'd be like, skucks.
Or skucks, mate.
Or, oh, that shirt looks skucks. And they usually like put that. A bit of like beef behind it. Skucks.
Skucks.
I'm probably butchering all of these. I'm gonna have Kiwis upset at me. Another funny one I like is sus. Oh, that's sus, bro. Like if something's suspicious, you'd say, oh, that's sus, bro.
I've heard that actually. That's getting into the pop culture around here, mate.
Yeah, and if another way they use it too is if you want to check it out, for example, you'd say, oh, I'll suss it out.
Yeah. I could get behind that.
Yeah. And then here's one that I do pretty well is if someone's worried about something, you can respond, ah, she'll be right.
Ah, she'll be right.
Yeah, you've probably seen that in some Kiwi movies or...
I mean, basically just saying it'll be all right, right?
Yeah, she'll be right.
Yeah, that's actually like the Amundrud thing in a nutshell. Just like, yeah, just roll with it. She'll be all right.
Yeah. Another one that makes me crack up all the time is people will tell a story and they'll be like, oh, I was in the dairy, which is what they call a corner store. And so they'll be like, I'm in the dairy. Neck minute, I'm getting attacked from behind. And neck minute is what they use instead of like next minute. They drop it down to neck minute.
The neck minute.
Yeah. It just sounds so funny.
Authentic Kiwi getting skucks, bro. It's the neck minute. Getting chased by the dog.
I'm getting chased by the police. Neck minute. I'm arrested. And then another one would be keen. If you're like, oh, in Canada, we'd say, oh, yeah, I'm down. Or like, yeah, I'm interested. Here, you'd say, oh, I'm keen. I thought it was weird when I first came here because I was like, keen. I'm like, that sounds like something people would say in the 1950s. I feel like it just never moved on. And speaking of that, people use the term fortnightly. Like, that's a thing here. I was like, fortnightly? Like, what is this, medieval times? Like, we say bi-weekly. Bi-weekly is fortnightly.
Oh, that makes sense. It is 2 weeks. That's what a fortnight is, 2 weeks, right? Like,
yeah, once in a fortnight. I didn't know what that was for the longest time. I was just like, okay.
Fortnightly. That is a revelation for me.
Hard out.
Skucks, bro. It's skucks.
Skucks. Yeah, I knew you'd like that one. That one's the best. Skucks, bro.
So versatile. So versatile. Okay. You already dropped this little piece of info earlier. So the news is already public. You announced it to our church. So I feel I can ask this question. Now that you and your wife are expecting, What terrifies you and excites you? What excites and frights you the most about becoming a father in what, a month?
Yeah, like 4 weeks. It's less than a month now. When you asked that question, I just had so much anxiety and pressure on my chest.
Feel the oppression.
I mean, there's a lot frightening about it. It's a lot of responsibility. It's a tiny human being that you hear so many stories of what could go wrong. Don't feed it honey. Oh, don't make sure you support its head. Don't do this. I'm at least at ease because Laura has a lot of experience and knowledge with babies. So I feel like she can be the expert and I'll just be there to support.
You'll be the butler.
Yeah, I'll be the butler. I'll be making dinner, you know, I don't know, pitching in where I can. But there's a lot of unknowns with babies, and I think that's what freaks me out the most. There is a huge amount of excitement just being able to put my hand on Laura's stomach and feel the baby move is a really crazy feeling, and it kind of hits home like, whoa, I'm a dad. Mm-hmm. And it's a really special feeling, and I'm really looking forward to being able to share life with my child, going to the beach, fishing, you know, forcing the child to do all the activities that I want to do, accomplish all the dreams that I couldn't accomplish.
You have this baby's life mapped out already.
Yeah. No, I just want to enjoy life with them, and I'll do my best to raise them into a good human being that can be successful and accomplish their dreams. Mm-hmm. I'm really looking forward to watching them grow and seeing them take their first steps and start speaking.
Like all those big milestones, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And even seeing their personality come out. Like, I love when kids say like just the most ridiculous things. So I'm really looking forward to that.
It'll be your own kids saying those ridiculous things. You'll be like, who'd you get this from?
Yeah, well, I'm such a bad uncle. I'm really worried about how I'm going to be as a father as well. Like, I would teach all my nephews and nieces to say, mine. Give me that. It's mine.
That's right. I could just see you saying that to, like, Ezra.
Yeah. And then, like, their parent would be like, no, we don't say that. We use our manners. And so I'd be like,
you'd be in the background like, mine.
I'd say, mine, please, now, mine, thank you, give me that, please.
Yeah, your kid will have a way with words.
Yeah, Laura has her work cut out for her.
She'll have to be taking care of two children.
It's almost like self-abuse. Like, I'm gonna be inadvertently training my kids' bad behavior because I think it's funny, and then I'm gonna have to deal with it.
You're like, it's not funny anymore.
I'm like inflicting pain onto myself.
Yeah, well, we got Laura, who I can't say I know her too well, but I do know that you guys have that warmth. Let's hope that that kind of comes through with little Aminger Jr. here.
Yeah, here's to hoping.
Prayers.
Yeah.
Pray a lot.
Yes, please. Anyone who's listening, put a little prayer out there for me.
I can't wait to hear, though, the dad stories, story time with Papa Ian. I mean, if it's anything like how you would do story time at couch and camp when it was cabin going to bedtime and you'd pull out the Bible stories and like depict every part of the story with a different accent. Oh man, yeah, the kid's gonna have a good time.
Yeah, it's gonna be a wild household.
I'm definitely coming over.
Please
I'll be
do.
Like, mine.
I'm also worried because apparently I told my mom when I was like 2 years old that I was going to ride a motorcycle and smoke cigarettes.
Nice.
So I'm just waiting for those sort of comments as well.
Going to be so scocks, bro, next minute. And you're going to have a cig in the mouth.
She'll be right, mate.
Yeah, exactly. Well, for the last part of this interview, because we're getting close to the end of our time together here, I wanted to ask a recurring question that I've been asking other podcast guests, and I want your opinion. So what's one thing you miss about the pre-COVID days that may never be the same again?
Yeah, well, obviously the biggest one is travel. And I know a few other people have mentioned that as well. But you look at other major histories or major events in history, travel has never been the same. So the last big one was 9/11. And after 9/11, you know, there's no more riding in the cockpit, and all of a sudden you're getting patted down and there's body scans and a ton of security. You got to take your belt off and your shoes off. So yeah, I'm not really looking forward to what the requirements are going to be to travel in the future. I'm hoping that we can travel in the future. There hasn't really been anything opened up yet here in New Zealand. Right now we are allowed to travel around New Zealand and that's it. Which poses a bit of a struggle when all your family or the majority of your family is on the other side of the world. So yeah, that's one thing I'm really looking forward to is international travel, but also a little bit cautious about what that might look like.
And but there's so many ways it could change.
Yeah, I've heard all sorts of theories about, you know, oh, you're not going to be able to travel until you get the vaccine when it comes out, which I personally am not that excited about, just based on how rushed it is. Who knows how safe it is and what the risks are. So
there will be no longitudinal studies on the first vaccines. Like, it'll be just, we think we've done what needs to happen. Like, yeah, we're going to try human trials and get it out there. And
Yeah, I'm hoping that's not a requirement. And I've heard other theories that, oh, you need, you know, you won't be able to travel until you have, you know, a chip or something like that, which I don't think is necessarily realistic. I don't necessarily think that'll be, I mean, it's a possibility. Anything's possible, but I don't really see that as being realistic. But yeah, just kind of looking forward to the announcement that, hey, you can travel. We were planning on coming back to Canada for Christmas to introduce our new little one. But we'll just have to see if that's still a possibility.
Yeah, I guess it's waiting. It's just waiting now.
Yeah, and I think too, what people really struggle with is all the unknowns with work, with travel, with what life's going to look like in general. It's hard to look forward to the future when it seems so
uncertain.
That's what I'm looking for. Yeah, uncertain.
Yeah, that's the hardest part. That's the hardest part. I think that for me, I'm lucky because there's not a lot of pressing and really important plans that COVID has dashed. I mean, there's things I'm disappointed in, like our family was supposed to be leaving pretty much a month from today to go to Italy for 3 weeks for our first time as a family leaving the continent. My parents have been out, but me and my sisters have never left North America and been in the States a few times, but that's really it. But like, it's not as if we had to be going on this trip. Not as if we have family over there that we haven't seen and new members of our family that need to meet them. So like, I'm pretty insulated from some of the challenge of what COVID is changing for travel. And for me, it's a little easier to swallow the unknowns because it doesn't affect me as much. But I empathize with you and with anybody that, like, you've got people that you desperately want to be around and be with, and those are much larger hurdles to cross now.
Yeah, and I know there's one person at our church whose father passed away during the lockdown, and I think his father lives in Australia, so even still he couldn't visit him. But just to not even be able to fly, it's like a 2 or 3 hour flight across to Australia, so to not be able to fly and see your father kind of in his last days, I think it's really, really challenging. And I know there's a lot of people who've faced situations like that. So I would say that Laura and I have it pretty good as well. We have seen our family. They've been out to New Zealand. Laura's parents were just here in December, which was awesome. But definitely it'll be a struggle if things don't change, you know, in the next little while. You know, if this is a new normal to not travel internationally, then that would be quite a scary thing. And again, that would be pretty absurd, I think. So
when that time comes and you're finally able to get on a plane, there's going to be nobody as excited as you carrying your baby, running down the tarmac, getting onto that plane, whooping and hollering.
Yeah. I just hope the baby's not doing too much whooping and hollering. They'll have a lot of angry people around us.
Screaming the whole flight home.
I'll make sure to invest in a good, high quality, expensive pair of sound canceling headphones.
For you, you alone.
I didn't hear the baby. What a great flight.
Dad goals right there. So good. Thanks, man. We're at the end of our time. I feel like I could ask you so many questions and we could dive deeper into some of the things you've said. Maybe we'll save that for another time. But for now, thanks for your time. We'll get this episode up and you'll be able to hear yourself and share your first interview on a private service announcement with the young one. It'll be like sharing Mozart and Beethoven.
Yeah, so if my baby's going to be listening to this, I better just say, Dada, Dada, not Mama, Dada.
Yes. Play this up against her belly. Yeah.
Yeah, I'll put it on repeat. Yeah. Thanks for having me. It's been a pleasure to catch up with you, and it's always a pleasure to catch up with you, but really an honor and very special to be on your podcast.
Thank you, my friend. It's been great, and have a good one, and we'll chat soon, Ian.
All right. Take care.